Thank you.
Well, like the other presenters, I'm so glad that you guys are here. I can appreciate it's the last day, and I do not have a video. Boy, what a hard act to follow. But I must admit that communication piece, I have to agree with it too. You know, when you live in it, the accreditation piece, you just assume everybody else does, and you have to learn how to communicate in these really tiny sound bites. I've come to the conclusion it's like 140 characters really to get your message across because people are perpetually distracted by the other work that they do that they actually get paid for to do. So bringing it home, kind of share with you our journey, California. I have nothing to report. Well, it kind of goes without saying, I don't have pictures, but I think y'all have probably seen enough pictures of California, San Francisco, LA, San Diego, etc. We are kind of big. Our governing entity is both our Health and Human Services Agency and legislature. And the reason why I say that is because this actually ended up being kind of one of those questions when you have some of the standards and measures where they speak to your governing entity, show evidence of communication with your governing entity. Well, actually, for us, it's both. It's both our Secretary of Health and Human Services, who actually appoints our director. But our directorate, which is the director and the two chief deputy directors, are confirmed by the Senate. So we actually had to point that out to our FAB site visitors. We have two masters here, which actually gave us the positive piece was more opportunities to demonstrate communication with our governing entity. So in some cases, we submitted legislative briefings. We have our budget is about $3 billion. We have 40 offices in 23 cities, and that kind of becomes a little bit of a barrier and a challenge because we are a big state, both in terms of geography and in size. It really made it difficult to coordinate our accreditation efforts. We have over 3,500 employees and over 300 civil service classifications. And the reason why I point that out is one of the things that kept me up at night was core competencies under Domain 8. How do you develop core competencies for 300 civil service classifications and about 20 bargaining units? So we were very fortunate to receive funding from RWJ, and we put the entire amount of funding toward UC Berkeley working with us on how to examine core competencies. And we're actually rolling it out with our analysts, which our analysts are about 600 of our employees. This is a really hard to read, but I just kind of want to, the reason why I have it in here is this is also one of the lessons, not lessons learned, but the power of having executive sponsorship in your journey. So at the very top, we have the director, which is Dr. Chapman, and then the two chief deputy directors. And again, that's called the directorate in our state, and the directorate must be confirmed by the Senate within 1 year of appointment, otherwise they're out. So they took it right to the 1 year, in fact, when they went through their Senate confirmation hearings. So over on the right-hand side, I'm just going to point down a little bit. You're going to see the Office of Quality Performance and Accreditation. That's the office I head up. The office is actually relatively new. It came to be under the director of Dr. Chapman in July of 2012. And what I'm pointing out to you here is I report directly to Dr. Chapman. And I have to tell you, that helps. It really does help when you're trying to coordinate the efforts around accreditation that your boss is everybody's boss. So you use that power sparingly, but when the director says, "This is important to me," what it's allowed me to do and the power of it is to get some people to the table who might not necessarily have come to the table. And I also agree, it's really helpful to be nice. It's not, he said you're going to do this, so show up. It's, how can I make this really easy for you to be a partner with this office around this initiative? This is our journey. And we actually, it was November 27, 2012, at our Public Health Executive Management Team meeting, which is about 45 of our executives, that the announcement was made by Dr. Chapman that we are going to seek accreditation. Now, November 27th is not probably the best time to go say we're going to go for accreditation. There's that thing called Thanksgiving and the holidays. So we actually really didn't start to get going until January of 2013, where we assembled our Accreditation Readiness Team, our ART team. And this was composed of executives. We then submitted our statement of intent in March of 2013, submitted our application in October of 2013, documentation in February of 2014. I want to build on one of the lessons Eileen said was, if we had just singularly focused on one step, without looking at all the other steps, I don't think we would have been able to move as quickly as we did. So in other words, while we were working with our state health assessment and our state health improvement plan, we were also looking at the process of identifying and collecting documentation, which, by the way, was one of the more laborious aspects of the whole process, because it really is that wonderful introspection across the organization as to what you do well. Then we had our site visit. Our site visit was the third week of August. It just happened to be the weekend before my birthday. So I thought, wasn't that kind of them? And then on my birthday, August 24th, we had our earthquake. You probably heard about the Napa earthquake, which I live actually kind of close to, which was, you know, rock and roll. And I thought, what a great way to bring in your birthday. You have your accreditation site visit and you have an earthquake. We actually did something unusual that FAB accommodated our request. We said, we are so excited about you coming to visit us and to see what we have done and to validate what you read about us. We don't want you here just 2 days. We want you 3 days. And they accommodated our request to do a three-day site visit. And the reason why we requested it is to not misuse those resources on both sides. It was because in our organization, our main office is up in the Capitol in Sacramento. But we have 1,000 employees that sit in our Richmond campus, our laboratories, and it's 75 miles from headquarters. And we really felt they could not get a holistic presentation of who we are without going to Richmond. So that meant that they actually had to travel down to Richmond and spend the night. So we had our site visit. So how did we achieve what it is that we achieved? A lot of what it is that you've already heard are some of the same things that also empowered us to achieve what we managed to accomplish. Whether we achieve accreditation, we still don't know yet. So what we used as far as our accreditation readiness structure, we really started at the top. But this is not a top-down approach. Accreditation is about the organization, and that has to live in the body. So you start with the top, but really to get the momentum and the value of accreditation, which is a thorough introspection of what you do well, elevate. We call it elevate and celebrate, but also embrace what you can do better based on what it is that our peers say are the standards of quality. So we started with the accreditation readiness team, and then what we did is we went down and across. We then formed domain teams, and what we did is we asked our accreditation readiness team members, sometimes they volunteered, sometimes they were voluntold, that they had to champion one domain. And I want to build on also the lesson there. If somebody doesn't own it, it doesn't get done. So these domain champions were responsible. So there was one domain champion for every domain, and then she came to my office and said, I need the following people on my domain team. And it wasn't always names. It would be, I need somebody from the Center for Infectious Disease. I need someone from the Office of the Laboratory. So what we're doing is top and then going across. And it expanded across the department when we were starting to collect our documentation. Hundreds of people were touched by this process. It's a team sport. And as an organization, we're only as strong as our team, and that's one of the beauties I see of accreditation. Also, we centralize documentation collection and organization, and boy, the documentation process of identifying it, collecting it, tracking it, reviewing it, and submitting it, oh, it's an amazing journey in terms of finding just the right example of what can demonstrate compliance with that measure. We lived at the required documentation level, which there's over 200 of the required documentation level. So we centralized it into my office, and we learned some really great lessons. One is naming your files becomes very powerful. I know it sounds simple. I heard it already. But know what your naming structure is going to be, because you don't want to have to spend an hour looking for a document that you know exists but somebody named it something different. So we became quite dogmatic in terms of naming, and we actually only allowed 2 people to name the files just to ensure that the quality was there. So our documentation collection, so thinking about one of the beauties of accreditation was we started at the top, but then we moved it to the body, to really where we live as an organization. And we did it in part, as I said, with the domain champion. They were our executive leads. But then they developed their teams, and they had the domain teams, which we started picking up our subject matter experts who recommended documentation. You know, there's something pretty powerful. If you sit in a program that's a small program, it might be the Needle Exchange Program under the Center for Infectious Disease, and you have an opportunity to submit documentation that's going to be looked at by your director, that's powerful. That's because what it does, it validates the work that they do. Then on the other side here, the domain team liaison, what I did was I had for every team, and they had multiple teams, I actually also had teams, is we had a team liaison. And this was all about support, support, support. Make it really easy for them to go out and find the documentation. So they guide, my staff guided the entire process. One of the lessons learning was silo busting and bridge building opportunity, the value of accreditation. One of my major detractors, who's an equivalent with me in my organizational structure, came up to me, not once, but several times, and said, nobody cares about accreditation. And I thought, oh, what did I get myself in for? She said, seriously, nobody cares about accreditation. And I thought, well, just keep plowing forward. Just going through this process, there was people at the table, and I've got 20 plus years in with public health. There were people at the table as we were doing this process who were looking at other people across the table who had the same amount of years of experience and say, I didn't know you did that. It was really transformative for people to see the linkages between what they're doing in the Center for Infectious Disease and the Center for Family Health. Because let me tell you, we can live in our own silos and do quite fine. We don't need to play with one another. But accreditation brought together relationships. Silo busting, bridge building. My staff is tired of me saying that. And by the way, that major detractor, about a few weeks before the accreditation site visit, we were in intense, let's, you know, focus on how the interviews are going to go. This is not a test. This is really talking about who we are. She came up to me. I almost fell over when she said this. She came up to me. She said, you know, Lorianne, this whole accreditation thing, it's been really great because, you know what, we're doing it and we're looking at what we do well and what we can do better, and we're not being told to do it because the legislature, we're in trouble with the legislature. I don't know if any other states or cities or counties ever get told by your governing entity you must do an audit. We unfortunately do get that quite a bit. And she goes, it's not at the end of a sharp stick. She said, this has been a really great process. So by this time, my eyes go wide open, and I'm thinking, this is the same person that said nobody cares. And then she looked at me, and she goes, so how are you going to keep it going? And I thought, well, I don't know how we're going to make it going after the site visit, but we've got a supporter. This is what we did in terms of our documentation review. And all I really want you to get out of this slide is not necessarily to try to read it, but to know we looked at it, we re-looked at it, we looked at it, we re-looked at it, and we brought in other eyes. We were very fortunate to receive some funding from ASTO to bring in Susan Ramsey, who looked at it. So after the domain team submitted the documentation, their best of their best, we sent it to the policy committee. The policy committee is composed of only about 12 to 15 deputy directors. They're the most senior executives within the organization. Some volunteered to do it, some were voluntold. But they stepped up and did it, and they reviewed it. And then what they did to us is they said, you know what, this example doesn't look really good. You know, I think there's a better example. So we strengthened it. After we strengthened it, we were very fortunate that ASTO provided the services of a consultant who looked at about 50 of our measures, the ones that we thought, oh, we just don't know if we've got it. And sometimes some of the comments she would make, I go, are you kidding, really? Really? That's really getting into the weeds. But then I'd take a deep breath and I'd say, okay, I think she's got a point here, and we strengthen if we could. You can't create something that isn't there. And by the way, if we were to hit all of the measures, then we didn't stretch far enough. And there were some that we know that we need to work on. So we strengthen it. Then Dr. Chapman reviewed everything. And believe it or not, he'd come back and say, hi, yikes, this domain 7. I really don't like the example that you use for a press release. Do you think you could go find another one? Sure. So we strengthened it again. And then when we got to that point, we actually converted all the documents and uploaded them to EFAP. And based on experience that I had as a site visitor, I decided to do things a way that make it really easy for our site visitors. We stitched all of our documents together through Adobe Pro so that for every required documentation, there was only two uploads. One was the narrative, and the other one was all of the documents stitched together. And in the narrative, what we did was the folks that were writing the narratives, which was me and my team, is act like they don't know you at all and hold their hand and take them through all of the documentation and highlight it. The beauty of writing those narratives was it also forced us as an organization to tell our story at the required documentation level. It involved hundreds of people, and therein lies the beauty of accreditation. Every center and office was involved. It was an opportunity to scan our environment versus dealing with the next issue, dealing with the next issue, dealing with the next issue. Whether it's the Ebola or San Diego fires or H1N1, it allowed for constructive time to examine what we do well as an organization. It also gave us the opportunity to elevate and celebrate what we do well. I don't know if you guys have this issue. We're moving so fast that when we do something well, we don't go, wow, we did a good job there. We don't do that enough. And accreditation allowed us to actually elevate and celebrate. But for me, I love the part about opportunities for improvement. To me, that's the kind of fun in accreditation. So this site visit preparation is a busy slide, and we started with our strategic planning in around April, it's our timeline, and then it was selecting who we were going to have on our domain site visit team. So we had domain champions who had domain teams. Were those domain teams the domain site visit teams? No, they weren't. They were different people in most cases. And what we were looking for is we went first to the domain team, picked people we thought might work, but we wanted people in the interview who could talk to the intent of the domain. Because we suspected that when our site visitors were going to ask us questions, they weren't going to get too far into the weeds, but we also wanted the subject matter experts at the table as well. We also wanted someone who could speak globally to the domain. So like on workforce development, I was on that team because I'm responsible for workforce development. We also wanted people who could make the linkages to our health assessment, our health improvement plan, and our strategic plan. Then we started the process of preparing them. And I have to tell you, the number of people who, very high level, people who have testified in front of the Senate, they were nervous about this site visit. They felt like it was a test. And part of what I saw in my job was to constantly remind people, this is not a test. This is about us taking the opportunity to talk about who we are. The good, the bad, the ugly, it is who we are. It's an opportunity. And I promised them that there was no question that the site visitor was going to ask that they didn't have a reasonable response to. So from June through August is we really worked with them. We identified what their roles and responsibilities were. We talked to them about, we had them review all of the documentation. So keep in mind, some of these people who were on these domain site visit teams had never seen the documentation. So what we did is we scheduled every other week. I had 13 meetings every other week, and we would walk through what it is that we submitted, and we would discuss it. Here was the other beauty. We did another environmental scan, because what we did was we were harder on ourselves than those site visitors could be, because as we reviewed the documentation, one of the questions we asked the people at the table was, is it good enough? What would you ask us if you were a site visitor? And at the very end, we actually captured what our team said as far as our strengths were and where our opportunities for improvement, and we're going to add that to the list when we get our site visit report. We use SharePoint, extensively used SharePoint on this. And we actually use the discussion aspect of SharePoint so that the team members could talk to one another. Then we did something that one of our directorate came to me and said, Lorianne, I want you to write me talking points for all of the domain team interviews that I'm going to be in. And I went, oh, wow. Now, those of you, I've prepared talking points for my directorate before. It's just what you do. I've had talking points prepared for me. I've testified before the legislature on accreditation, and I thought, I can't do this. Just because the level of complexity with each of these domains. So what we said instead is what we're going to do is discussion summaries. So we took all of the summaries from every one of those meetings, and we met anywhere from 4 to 6 times, depending on the domain. Domain 2, 6 meetings we needed because it's a big domain. And we summarized everything they said at the required documentation level, and we summarized what they said that was our strengths and where we needed to work on. So the logistics plan was also happening at the same time as well, and where we actually had a logistics site visit plan right down to times of when our escorts would meet our team to moving the employees into the interview. We had over 80 employees that were interviewed. And as you know, they're going on at the same time. I made sure everyone was in their chair 15 minutes before that site visit person showed up so that, you know, it's out of respect. We, in our work plan, was also allocating resources, beg, borrow, and steal. I didn't have enough staff, so I asked for staff. So the site visit goal for us was not a test. And I would encourage you, if you haven't had your site visit yet, I'd encourage you to model the same thing as well. It's not a test. It's really about telling your story. And the great thing is, as a family, we didn't know what each other's stories was. Coming together allowed us to tell a story. So our guiding principles for how we selected our domain site visit team was, our director says, this is all about us. This isn't going to be kept at the director's level. So we were inclusive in terms of putting people in the team meetings for the site visit interview. So we were more inclusive than exclusive. We also wanted to balance it between our subject matter experts and people who could speak to the global intent of the domain, who had that broad departmental perspective. And always messaging to our state health improvement plan and our strategic map, as well as, and I didn't put it up there, quality improvement. This is all interrelated, and that was one of the big lessons we learned too. What we told our site visit, domain site visit team, and I gotta tell you, the people that were nervous by the site visit, and like I said, I saw one of my principal roles was doling out anxiolytics, because just to calm people down was just to say it really is a peer-to-peer conversation. And so this is one of the slides we actually used when we were talking to our domain site visit teams, is communicate the CDPH's experience as it relates to the domain. Just checking my time. Be able to describe our operation and culture and demonstrate how and why what we do measures up to the FAB standards and measures. So what we were saying to them was just tell your story. Here's the number one fear my directorate had. By the way, in every one of those domain interviews, there was a directorate present. When you are sitting at the table, and some of these people that were at the interview process were positioned in the organization that they don't ever get to visit the director's office, let alone sit at the table with the directorate. So what we were really nervous about is when you have a member of the highest level within your organization sitting shoulder to shoulder to you, it has a tendency to paralyze people. They don't want to talk. So the directorate was really concerned, and they kept supporting the team about, you know, you guys, you're the ones, you know, I want you to do the talking. Dr. Chapman was really great about this on the four interviews he sat in. He said, you guys, he said, there's a part of me that almost wants to step away and let you just talk. So we were all a little nervous, and I sat in on a number of the site visit interviews as a subject matter expert, and what shocked me was how engaged the team was. They had been quiet up until the actual site visit interview process, and at one point it was like multiple domain nine. I remember this one, domain nine. The folks at the table were raising their hand. I want to talk next. I want to talk next. And it was beautiful, because what it did was they owned it and they wanted to be a part of telling their story. So I kind of already said this. They were specially selected because they either had subject matter expertise on documentation. They had a global perspective to connect department-wide activities that tended to be more your executives. And they could make the linkages with our health improvement plan and strategic plan. The team composition continued to change up until the site visit, literally the Friday the week before, where the team would say, you know what, I really think we need someone from the STD unit on here. And we would go out and get them and orient them to the process. So their responsibilities was they had to know the domain intent. They had to review the documentation we submitted to FAB. We asked them, we want you to think like a FAB site visitor. What would you ask us if you were them? Where are our gaps? This isn't about us passing an exam. This is about us owning the ability to be a quality performing organization, which means we are a learning organization. And if the measures were reopened, they were to assess any reopened measures. Because keep in mind, at the time we were preparing them, our site visit team was reviewing our documentation, and they did reopen some of our measures. And we brought those back to the table. We asked them to develop questions and also generate the responses. That discussion summary is going to inform our activity going forward. So what we did in terms of our prep tools, all of our domain team, site visit team members had the final discussion summary, which took it all the way down to the required documentation level, but also provided the overview of what the team felt was our strengths and opportunities for improvement. They had the document review and discussion guidelines, and we used a share to support all of this. We relied heavily on SharePoint. I would never encourage you, depending on your size, to use email as your method of principal communication, because your team will never know what's the latest email. So we used SharePoint, and we owned SharePoint, my office, in terms of supporting it. We don't consider accreditation as a check mark. We don't consider it as checking it off our list. Done with that. We really do and have embraced at the highest levels that this is a continuous quality improvement journey. And as you notice, these roads are not straight. And they weren't straight in the first slide that I showed you, because it's ups and downs, and sometimes you don't think you're going to get it done. So here's some of the lessons we learned is celebrate and model what works. As a large organization, we were transmitting best practices across the organization. Embrace opportunities for improvement. Now, this is a big one. You're not supposed to be perfect. So if you're studying to get an A, and let me tell you, we've got A personalities in my organization. You got to leave that at the curbside, because you're not supposed to get it all right. That's the principle of accreditation. Be agile and flexible. I can't tell you how many times we shifted courses. When my directorate comes to me and says, I want talking points on all those domains, I said, how am I going to address that? Discussion summaries. The other thing is, just do it. Just put yourself out there. And then that's the scary part, because failure can paralyze organizations. I think I gave... kind of push through it, so I have some extra time. I think we have 10 minutes left. Thank you for allowing me to present this.
So first, if there are clarifying questions for Florian, I'd like to first address any of those, and then we can open it up for questions for any of our panelists, any discussion questions. Are there clarifying or explanatory questions? Okay. So questions for any of our panelists about the process, just things that they spoke about.
I have a question for kind of all three of you or anyone else who is involved in this. I'm newer to the state of Wisconsin as the interim person overseeing accreditation of the hire someone. One of my biggest concerns is making sure that as we move forward that it is about fundamentally looking at how we do business and making ourselves a more efficient, effective organization, and not getting the trophy and passing the test. And so I'm curious how you have helped ingrain that culture, or if you did. I know for some people they want it to be about the skip trophy and that's what motivates them. But I'm concerned that, you know, it's a superficial check the box that we met this minimum versus really take this as an opportunity to change what we do and how we do it. And so I'm just curious what your experience was and any you have and how to make sure that it is really about changing that culture.
Well, I'm just going to take a stab at it. We're not pregnant yet. We're just waiting for the decision. There's a thing, once you look at yourself, you start to put in mechanisms to measure your performance, it's hard to look away from it. And what accreditation does is it's a forcing function around creating the ability to measure the quality of your performance. And Bab will tell you this all the time, and it's been my experience as well. The quality improvement, that continual process of evaluate and incrementally increase, is built throughout all of the domains. Conversely, you don't see that with, let's say, the conditions of participation for hospitals, which is my background, which they tacked on a quality improvement condition of participation about 10, 15 years ago. It's embedded throughout all of the Bab domains. It's almost difficult when you're going through the process to revert back to a culture of siloed kind of behavior. But that doesn't mean it doesn't require that constant energy. I think for us, it's my role, and I think this is a big one, is how do I embed it into the culture of the organization so that people always have it right here. For example, if you're in a hospital, you don't see policies and procedures being developed without examining the conditions of participation for the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services or the Joint Commission. They embed it into the culture around policy development. So that's kind of where I'm going in terms of creating that culture where it's constantly they're thinking about, are we in compliance? And that means communicate.
I'd say that's pretty much our philosophy. We really embedded this whole process in the quality improvement model for the agency, our commissioner. And this is, you know, historically, we've never had a commissioner as long as we've had, and one of her tenets has been working smarter and with fewer resources and improving and enhancing the quality of the services we provide. And she's been saying that all along, and we've actually had the privilege of having the same commissioner from the time, I guess, since 2012. And I've been there 10 years, and she's the seventh commissioner. So that's been very helpful in terms of continuing that culture of examining what we're doing and trying to do it better, and not in a punitive way, but just exploring how we can do more efficiently to help ourselves out of the mayhem that is created by responding to all the other issues that we deal with on the regular.
So just to kind of build on that, I think you're going to have traction. This is what I'm hoping in California. You're going to have traction when the body thinks about it. When the people who are doing the work year after year after year, when their administrations change, because we have the same, I mean, the average duration of a health director is about 3 years, is if the body owns it. So the people, the middle management, management of your organization. They're the ones who are saying, well, now, does this conform with the accreditation standard as it relates to surveillance, or how does this connect with our shift? It's really that organizational buy-in in the middle of the organization, not necessarily the top.
No, those are great answers. It's just talking, and that everyone who becomes involved becomes an ambassador. And so everyone who's involved, whether it's on a little work group or accreditation group, whatever, they have to get it, and then they spread it. And we've seen a huge shift in, this whole thing has been like an organizational change case study, because, and people have been at the department more than 5 years, they're like, oh my God, this is just such a different place than it was 10 years ago, when people didn't know each other, and we didn't know what each other did. And so, I don't know the secret sauce, but I think it's just everyone involved gets it, and then they share it. That is helpful.
So I'm currently assisting in the preparation for presentation in the store department of public health. And what we are finding, because we have hundreds of programs, is that every program has their own version of performance evaluation, or quality improvement. And how do you create comprehensive quality improvement vision, or performance management vision or system, with so many transnational projects that are going on right now? What's your best advice? That's the problem we're running into. Well, and the other thing is, you know, it's a little territorial. And so we've got one program, so that, well, you know, we want to continue with our own QI. We don't want the QI consultants to come in on behalf of accreditation and talk, show us what we need to be doing. You know, so that's the sort of thing that we're trying to work through right now, so we can find the new kind of performance management.
Well, you want to go ahead, Phyllis?
Sure. We encountered that very problem when we initiated an agency-wide QI program. One of our divisions, Public Health Services, had begun their own QI program. And what we did was meet with them right away and say, this is not the use of your program, but we want to make sure that we're not conflicting in terms of the training and the activities that are ongoing. Please join us. Please include your CQI initiatives in the report out. So we've routinely involved folks that have not been trained. So we have the privilege of using Public Health Foundation to do our QI training. Beginning in 2012, we also had another consultant do some training as well. But our process is that we do the training, it's usually a 1 or 2 day full-day training, and then we continue on with the implementation of the CQI project. And I guess the bonus at the end is that they get to present to the deputies and the commissioners, and this is the commissioners, the results of their project. And so we routinely allow for folks who have done QI through other training opportunities. So there is an agency-wide QI program, but we encourage them to do QI programs anyway, without, you know, judging how it's being done. But really, what's important is that the tools are being applied, and people are learning how to do it routinely as part of their work.
Well, I certainly don't have the answer here. I think everybody is really grappling with the whole issue around quality performance, or performance management, quality improvement. This was probably one of our biggest learning curves in our organization, and it's also an area for improvement, is around quality performance. In fact, when I started really educating our fellow executives around performance management, and we were using the turning point model, finally one of the executives raised his hand and said, are you talking about managing my performance?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I flipped it around, and now call it quality performance. And we don't call it performance management. And we've coupled in our quality performance, quality improvement plan, they're one. The quality performance system is a subset. Well, the quality improvement process is a subset for quality performance system. So we link them, and then we have quality performance council, who ultimately our council will be composed of individuals that will do wide and deep distribution. So it's technician sitting next to a deputy director of Quality Performance Council. The council is responsible for implementation of our quality performance system and our quality improvement projects using our adopted quality improvement process, which is plan to check out. We're in our infancy on this piece. We also have the same issue. We did a survey of our organization on quality improvement back in 2011. We found out, oh yeah, we're doing quality improvement in pockets, different processes. Six Sigma, Lean, Kaizen, and some of them are being mandated by funders. So we're not, let's say, ignoring that, but what we're doing is we're creating a centralized, at-the-top council composed of the peers to support us in both the implementation of our quality performance system and our quality improvement process. We also are about ready to launch in January a basic QI training. It will be mandatory for all current and future employees, and is to create fundamental foundational knowledge around QI, and we're also in the process of using some remaining CDC funds for QI intermediate training to start to build a capacity and a cadre of individuals. But I'm going to tell you, this has been the biggest challenge for us, is finding people who understand quality improvement in public health. They keep wanting to transpose a healthcare model onto us, and it doesn't work.
Right.
So we're having difficulty finding qualified practitioners. And if you want any of these documents, what our quality performance plan looks like, we'd be happy to share.
The other thing I would add is we met with every program manager, and we still meet with them. We meet with them quarterly, and I agree with everything that they said, and would add it's all about the relationship and making sure that it's not antagonistic. Well, this is how we do it. How can we blend that? How can we support what you do and add this other piece that looks like you're not really doing? And I can't even most of the day it's just meeting and meeting and meeting to fix and figure out all these things. It's the work.
You mentioned that you have a performance management tool of some sort, or
we have a database.
A database. Mm-hmm. So is it limited in terms of who can access that database? I don't want to take up too much time.
Yeah, we can give you the details. I can give you the details of that.
At this point, we're actually a couple of minutes over on time, so I want to thank you all for joining us this morning and thank our panelists for speaking.